and tight like the new Pokemon trainer ladies' shorts. It's Boss Barrel Radio. I'm Griff Hoffman, and with me is Jeff Nintendo's Not Dead Brewer.
Nintendo's not dead. Also, Griffin, you're probably going to jail because you just there's 10-year-old children, and you talked about their shorts.
Speaking of 10-year-old shorts, Dr. James Scherer is here with us.
I'll never change. Never. I'll die in these shorts.
You're in 10-year-old shorts, and there's and you're holding a 10-year-old.
They're the cargo short zip-off things.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
They never got old.
No.
No.
Extremely useful.
When I was home over the holidays.
You got hot knees. You got to zip them down a little bit. Get some air in there.
Exactly. Sometimes you can just zip like half of them off. Uh-huh. Just show the knee. Just give a little preview.
I was going to say, when I was home over Memorial Day, my mom presented me with a pair of old cargo pants. I was like, here, do you want these?
And you said, and yes.
And I swear this happens to me every single time I come home. There's a new pair of cargo and or zipper pants that she's recovered from some deep, dark corner of my closet, which she thinks I might still want.
Is it your Letterman cargo shorts?
She threw out all your Legos but kept all your cargo shorts.
Yes. She knows how timeless it is.
Thanks, Mom. Well, guys, we're here to talk about some video games. Do you have any interesting things that have been going on since the last week we talked? Like I said, this is going to be high and tight, short-style podcast thing that we're doing now.
I really want to talk about the political situation in the Middle East, and I want to really, I really want to dig in with you guys. First off, ISIS? Yay or nay?
Oh, I think I'm turning into a robot. I gotta disconnect my call, guys, forever. Oh, no.
No. I'm ready. Griff.
Yo.
Start off with TMNT. Why, I wanted to know before the podcast started why you're torturing yourself. Tell me about TMNT.
Okay, so, well, let's give a little additional preview here. This week on Boss Barrel Radio, we're going to talk about Pokemon.
Nice.
The Xbox Scorpion rumors / details.
Get over here.
And,
is that Scorpion? I don't even
GPUs.
Know.
But before we do that, let's talk about the games we've been playing. Jamie, you said, why am I playing Turtles in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's a Platinum game.
But is it?
It's a game by Platinum.
What every time that they make some sort of licensed game, though, my esteem for that company just goes down another notch.
Could I teach you something about Platinum, Jamie? They are a small studio that does not make money on most of their games, and this is the only way they can exist.
Yeah. Also, the Transformers game was pretty good.
Yeah, that too.
I have not played that game, so.
Yep.
I must try it.
It was fine. Unfortunately, Mutants in Manhattan is not very good. You can definitely see the underpinnings of quality Platinum products, like with their patented Dodge. And then kind of integrating some of the collection / loot-em-up aspects that they did well in Transformers. But it just kind of all falls apart in Turtles. Turtles, the premise is you play as one of the turtles of the Turtles in Teenage fame, the Mutant Ninjas fame. You know.
Never easy to say.
Dudes in rubber suits. And it is a beat 'em up, but with the platinum polish. So the combat has a ton of combos in it, and there's lots of mobility, and it's got a kind of interesting art style. Just unfortunately, it drops the ball on a lot of occasions. I guess the angle for this game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutants in Manhattan, is that you can play it 4-player. So that, changes the dodge mechanic. Obviously, you can't go into slow motion when you have other people playing with you. So what they do is you get kind of like a buffer. So you hit your dodge button, and you can dodge for, let's say, 4 seconds, and you'll be invulnerable. But if you have a perfect dodge, you'll back attack the enemy. And it just doesn't feel quite as rewarding or as comprehensible as any of the other Platinum brawlers, mainly because there's a lot going on screen when you're playing with four turtles around you. Also, you know, there's lots of, like, team-up attacks that just muck up the whole screen and make everything very confusing. So I don't ever feel like I'm doing cool shit. I just feel like I'm mashing on buttons for the most part. And then the missions that you're going on are very random, open-world generated. Like, hey, go defend this thing or go fight these guys. I'm like, ugh, why? And then it culminates, each level culminates in, like, a boss fight. So first thing you fight is Bebop, and Bebop, you know, is in a bank, and you're just, like, in an enclosed room, and he's jumping around doing attacks, and all you're doing is just chiseling away at his seven life bars, and all the turtles are there just whacking at him, and you lose kind of, like, that good feeling of intimately dodging the enemy attacks when you're just surrounded by a bunch of dudes, your bros, your brothers, your turtle bros, and it just rub me the wrong way. It doesn't feel like a great Platinum game in their pantheon of you know, quality brawlers, and I'm not interested in playing any more of it. I played up to Slash. Yes. So, I don't know. What else do you want to know?
This, for some reason in my mind, I'm equating this to another game where four gentlemen go on a journey together, and you control one of them in AI battles with lots of clumsily executed team-up attacks, namely Final Fantasy XV. I wonder if it's going to... I mean, obviously, they're very different games, but I wonder if it's going to feel lame in the same way, because you've just got these three other dudes running around all the time, just kind of mucking around and doing shit.
Yeah.
And one thing I remember noticing about that demo, at least the one that... The Dookie demo, whatever it's called, was that there was, like, an enemy with, like, 8 health bars.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it's going to be similar weaknesses. I mean, gosh, I can't wait until we are talking about that game, because I'm just very curious to see if there's going to be similar weaknesses there. But were there any other glaring faults with the game other than just having too many dudes in the screen and inflated health bars? Like, is the traversal bad, or, like, what?
One might lodge a complaint against the vibe of the turtles and how, like, it just is kind of stupid, but in the same respect, like, maybe the turtles have always been like that.
I was going to say, I like a lot of turtle stuff, but have the turtles ever not been dumb?
that's a good question a lot of people should maybe ask themselves if you're entering into a turtle situation of, hey, I loved this thing as a kid, and wait, why isn't it as good as it was before now? Well, maybe that humor is something of a generation gone by. So I can't really fault it for that, because in that regard, I felt like it did kind of maintain the feel of the old turtles. Positively, like, they definitely give each of the turtles, and I think this might be from their new cartoon, like, they each look different besides just their color masks. Like, you know, Donatello is, like, leaner and smaller than the other turtles, and Michelangelo is, like, always moving, and Raphael is, like, kind of, you know, stockier and beefier, and Leonardo is, like, decked out in a bunch of gear and much, like, kind of bigger and imposing than the other turtles. So they give them kind of their own personalities, just physically, you know, different from my childhood recollection of same plastic mold with different green color or different painted color over the eye masks.
How is Megan Fox's character?
Oh, hot. So hot. Oh, my God.
Also, I'm not sure if Jamie's here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the first Turtles movie is actually fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I'm here, and I completely agree. And the second one is good in its own way.
Yep.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a fine film.
No, it's terrible. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm. Haven't you ever wanted to whack a burglar in the face with sausage links, like, nunchaku?
The one thing I didn't know about the Turtles movies was that all the characters, like, during the fight scenes and stuff, would be voicing a lot of their lines, but then they just got redubbed by professional actors, except for Raphael.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he was the only person that did, like, the Brooklyn drawl and was, like, kind of, you know, I'm a cockney British man. No, sorry. He had that like Brooklyn accent down pat, and they couldn't
get out of here.
That was amazing.
That was really good.
You're welcome.
Podcast done. We're over. Cut it at 10 minutes.
No, I'll just
so
use
so angsty.
I'll just use that clip forever.
We've peaked. I'm sad that it's a bad platinum game. Do you think is this the worst platinum game you've played, Griffin?
No. Wonderful 101 was not a very good game.
Shots fired.
Really
shots fired.
Wasn't. It really.
Whoa,
really wasn't.
Griff. I mean Jeff. I thought you liked Wonderful 101.
It was
just because it's on a Nintendo platform does not necessarily mean Jeff loves it.
It's not always true. It's just true 95% of the time. No, it was conceptually interesting, but the execution was kind of poor, is the bottom line. I mean, it's really annoying to have to draw shit on the screen to do combos and attacks.
Yeah.
The whole thing was just pretty
awful. Yeah, it's like that second screen was kind of a bad choice, huh?
I know. I mean, it can be... Okay. World is great. I mean, second screens are not necessarily terrible. It's just that implementation was not wise.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so... Final verdict on that is kind of a letdown, since the Transformer game was pretty gosh darn good. I would not recommend playing Mutants in Manhattan.
So would you say you should throw Mutants in Manhattan right in the sewer?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like, it's better for you to dine on turtle soup tonight.
This is one pizza that was left in the oven. Oh, no, wait, wasn't... Fuck. You know what I mean.
Yep.
Didn't go in the oven for long enough. There you go. Domino's. Everyone eat Domino's. That was the... Yeah. Was it Domino's in the movies? It was Domino's, right?
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, okay. It's definitely Domino's.
Was it only in the second one?
I can't recall if it's both, but it's certainly in... Which is the one where he doesn't tip the guy because he's late? Is that one
I'm
or two?
I'm pretty sure it's the second
because
one.
Whichever one that is certainly a Domino's guy.
Yeah, I think it's the second one.
No, that's in one, because in second, Kino is the delivery guy, and he does not work at Domino's. He works at a very average-looking New York pizzeria.
I just remember seeing a lot of that like box with the blue Domino on it, but maybe I'm injecting that. Anyway, let's talk about something else. So you guys both jumped on the Overwatch bandwagon since last we talked and have been going to town on it. What feelings, Jeff, since you're the newcomer, do you have about the game that was supposed to be uninteresting for you?
I really like it. It's a lot of fun. Again, I've never played Team Fortress, so this is all new to me. It's really accessible and simple, and it doesn't do things that I don't like about shooters. Like, it doesn't require me to, like, pick up weapons in the field, which I don't like. And it doesn't require me to, like, I don't know, have a lot of different things that I don't usually use. Like, I would never, I don't know, this is dumb, but I would never, like, pop a grenade or use, like, my weird-ass tactical equipment in Call of Duty. But I feel like in this game, it's, like, everything is useful. And there's, like, four moves for each character. And it's just very simple for someone who's dumb like me to consume. And it's just fun. Like, I feel like I'm competent, which is rare in shooters. I have a few characters I like.
Who do you like?
I like Soldier 76.
Ugh. One of those.
He's good.
You're one of those, huh?
He's one of...
I'm razzing you.
Character.
I'm razzing you.
According to Axel Anderson, Soldier 76 is used on pro teams. Sometimes they even use two Soldier 76s.
He said McCree's real good, too. I can't figure out McCree. So I like Soldier 76. I like McCree. Or not... Fuck, I don't like McCree. I like Farrah. I like Farrah.
Mm-hmm.
I like May. She's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Who else do I like? D.Va I like, but I'm not that great with. I like Lucio. I think he's pretty cool.
Yeah, that seems to be a fan favorite. I forgot to bring him up, but yeah, he's fun to play as because you feel like you're doing something when you're not really doing anything.
Lucio's cool because, and they do a really good job with this too. Like, he's a utility character, but he's just got such interesting. Like, again, it's four moves, but he manages to be a really good hybrid who just feels like he's always doing a little bit of something.
Yep.
Like, never a lot, but always a little bit. And the game, it's good about, like, allowing you to, if you're in those roles, allowing you to feel like you're contributing, even though you're, like, just kind of slightly turning the tide.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just been really fun, and I think it's definitely more fun when you get people to play with. Like, I can have a good time, like, just chilling in rooms and stuff, but it's way more fun, like, when Jamie gets on, and, like, Axel gets on and brings a bunch of friends, and I'm hopeful that, you know, I don't know what you guys are up to tonight, but I'm just, like, it's got its hooks in me. I just want to play.
Are we going to play tonight? Yeah. Are we going to play?
Yeah.
I'll hop on.
Jessica's going to hate me.
I'll jump off from there by saying that last night Jeff and I played for a long time, and we maybe lost, what, Jeff, 10, 15 matches in a row? And yeah, even though we were playing with one of my friends who's a big complainer, and he was so down the entire time, even though we were just losing match after match, not losing is putting it mildly, we were getting absolutely decimated every match. I was still having a ton of fun. And at the end of the match, when it shows you what you did, you still feel like you did something. Like, you're still getting gold medals and silver medals and bronze medals, depending on what you did. And if it doesn't matter if you lose, you can still evaluate your performance in that match in a really constructive way, and really ask yourself, for the next match, did I do well with this character? Should I be trying someone else? How can I best fit in with this team? It's awesome.
Sure, and it's nice because it compares the stats against yourself. Like, you know, it's not like, hey, this guy had a better ratio than you. It's like, hey, you did better than last time when you were doing this. So maybe that's your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that it's team-based because I feel like when I play with, like, Axel, I feel like I become a better player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
Like, I feel like it motivates me to learn and pay attention to my play, whereas if I were just on my own, I'd just be dicking around and not really picking anything up.
Right.
And I also feel like it prevents any one amazing team member from just borking the game.
Yes. Well,
of course, if you get an amazing team coordinating with each other, then you're truly fucked. But and that's kind of what we were dealing with a lot last night. But it's still really fun.
If you're,
one thing I will... Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to add in, if you're playing with good people, it's one of the few games where a really talented player who knows the map, who knows what they're doing, can tell me, hey, there is a Bastion camped at this point on the map. Why don't you go around him this way and kill him? And I feel like it's one of the few games where I can actually, like, say, yes, I can do that, and then I will do it. And I feel like if the skill cap, if this game was attuned any differently, someone like me who's not very good wouldn't be able to do that. But I really enjoy being able to take the advice of more skilled and talented players in the match with me and just execute the things that they think should be done.
Also, when we play with Axel, he doesn't get pissed at us for being bad. So
yeah,
this game must be doing something.
Well, I think you've already pointed out, Jeff, like, no matter what, you can always do something useful, even if it's, you know, you're playing Lucio and you're just adding a passive buff to everybody by healing him or speeding him up, or if you're healing with the healer or throwing down turrets, or even just doing DPS and pulling kind of interest aggro off the other team as another character. Like, the game does a lot, gives you a lot of avenues to explore to be useful.
That's true. You can definitely be dead weight, though, because we had some pretty serious dead weight on our teams. Although they were just, like, so egregious. Like, I feel like they were so not involved that they were, like, going the other way.
Yeah, dead.
Like, you have to be pretty bad.
Dead weight is dead weight. Staying in the spawn area and just standing there. If you're doing anything other than that, you're contributing somehow.
Right.
Or, like, being the guy with the shield and then not putting the shield out.
Yeah.
Which happened surprisingly much.
My friend last night that we were playing with, great guy, but wow, was he getting pissed off. He kept saying, like, can we report these people? Can we report these people? Like, we had a Reinhardt who wasn't putting his shield up. And it just reminded me how lucky we are to have this game where, no, You can't report people, and you shouldn't be thinking that way when you play this game. Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
They kick you if you've been inactive for too long.
Yeah, like most games.
As I've discovered. Yeah. I was going to say, one thing that I'm not super jazzed about, well, I'm kind of ambivalent. I've liked it sometimes, but I've found it to be very tedious and annoying other times, is the overtime mechanic, which I think sometimes can and Jamie will just maybe disagree. I think sometimes it can privilege the attackers because, like, if you have, like, a hard-fought defense, like, those are long matches. Like, they can be up to, like, 15 minutes long. And if you've succeeded in defending and then the game goes into overtime and they manage to pull it back from the brink, it's just, like, infuriating. It's just like, why did I waste all this time?
It's infuriating, yes, but I think that it adds to the tension in a good way. And I also think that while overtime may be in those matches that you're describing in favor of the attackers slightly, the map itself is designed in favor of the defenders because your second defense point is so close to the spawn area that if you die, you're back in the fray much quicker than someone who's attacking. So I feel like I feel like it balances out that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I may cite Axel Anderson, PhD in Overwatch, he said that right now the game is very attacker slanted.
Oh, really?
Apparently in pro matches, it's not a matter of who wins. It's a matter of how fast the attackers win.
Interesting.
That was always kind of a thing in Team Fort, too, when I remember playing it. And it was, on a lot of the defend maps, the defense, like, I don't know. It was easier to attack than it was to defend. So, you know, whether it's true or not, like, there's definitely something to that. Maybe it's harder to balance, and in time it will get corrected.
Well, I think overtime is probably well-suited to quick play, because I know there are other modes that are planned, which are going to be, I guess, like, more competitive focus, which I probably wouldn't even want anyway.
Can't wait for the dating sim mode.
Yeah, right. You can finally stare at Mercy's pinkies for all you want. I was going to say, maybe they'll cut that back in some of the more competitive modes. Obviously, I wouldn't want that because I like the more casual friendly modes. But I think it is a casual friendly mechanic, which isn't a problem. But I think that it might be slightly to the detriment of actual balance.
Hmm.
So that's all.
So you guys are going to keep on playing Overcrotch?
Hell yeah!
Yeah,
it's pretty fun, Griffin. Night. You should. Your PC could easily max it, because I'm running it max 1440p.
Yeah, for serious, Griff, you gotta get on this gravy train.
No, I'm good. I'll be playing on console.
But Griff, you should play with us.
You're gonna have to send that game back to an unnamed game reselling outlet eventually.
You're gonna have to send that game back to your cousin Joe, who
And then when that happens, you can go ahead and buy that sweet $40 version.
Yeah, no, I'll pass. I prefer to play on consoles.
God fucking damn it. Griffin, what if I take your...
I'm just trying to kill my PlayStation 4 is all I'm going for.
What if I take your DualShock 4 and configure it like a 360 controller and put it on your PC?
I've done that before, actually, to play some games, and no, that's terrible. Because mouse and keyboard is going to totally overwhelm playing with sticks.
He's playing. No, he's listen, playing hard to get, but we'll get him in the end.
Griffin, it doesn't matter because there's auto aim.
So okay, actually, this is a good question. Good follow up.
Is there
auto aim on the PC? I think I said there was on last night, but did you guys?
There's the more you've been playing, sir, no.
There's no auto aim.
There's
aim
nothing.
At all.
Okay.
So Soldier 76, his ability is basically auto-aim.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I was super surprised when you said that last week, because I was like, I don't think so, because if it was auto-aim, maybe I wouldn't be, like, the worst, but I am.
Hmm.
No, but I'm bummed, Griff, because it's really fun to play with people, and it's a fun game to just kind of hang out in and chat and do some basic strats. So if you ever... If you ever change your mind, we'll be waiting.
All right, well, if you guys ever want to come on over to PlayStation 4,
support
that console you love.
Expect a certain birthday present.
Oh, snap.
Shots fired.
Cool.
You can't decline a birthday present.
That's true. Can I resell it?
Can
I re-gift it?
You can't, because it's digital only, baby. Good luck selling your Blizzard titles.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Also, your account has already been hacked by a Korean.
Actually, that's actually a very good point. I don't think I'd be able to play it since my Blizzard authenticator has gone screwy and I cannot get it to authenticate. When I was trying to play Diablo on the PC like years ago, Diablo 3, it just ended up going sideways and belly up and I could not get online anymore. So I was just like, oh, well, fuck you, Blizzard. I'm done.
Did you have like an unusually... valuable WoW account? Did you play WoW?
Yeah.
You have like a shitload of stuff on your WoW account that would be...
No.
Okay. That's weird.
Do I have a poor ability to comprehend technology? Yes.
Was your previous computer a trash fire?
Yes.
Are you still using a 4.3 monitor?
Yes. But there's two of them, so now it's double the 4.3.
And now it's 8.3.
Yeah. Well, it's 8.6. I mean, it's don't be ridiculous.
Let me tell you about a technology called a G-Sync. Uh-huh. It's more affordable than ever.
Okay.
Than ever before.
Okay.
Do you have $800?
Let me tell you about a teenager.
Let's talk about Doom!
Doomed!
Yeah.
Hit me.
So I can't believe you actually went and picked this up, Jamie. Are you playing it on PC?
I am playing it on PC.
Was there a discount?
No.
Oh.
Why are you surprised you bought it?
Weird.
I'm probably going to buy it
at some point.
We're all interested.
I bought Wolfenstein when it came out on PC. I love playing first-person shooters on PC, and I love me a good first-person shooter. And I heard this was a good one. And I heard right.
You did. I didn't do it justice last week because I only played like a level of it, and now I'm on the last level. And nice. Damn, is that game freaking good?
Yeah, so I'm still very early, so no spoilers. But I'm on either the third or the fourth level, but I'm really taking my time trying to find secrets, but I have found zero so far.
What?
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Can I go back?
Yes. Okay. You can level select from the main screen and go back to old levels and replay them with your current status / loadout.
Okay. Gotcha. What difficulty?
Which I have done a lot.
What difficulty are you playing?
Regular. I think it's Hurt Me More. Whatever the basic, whatever the medium is that they start you on.
Exactly, yeah. So in the beginning.
Is the base Wet Nurse?
I'm on medium.
It's called girlfriend mode.
Oh, no.
I do not know how that game walks the line so finely between the vast majority of the time I feel so gloriously overpowered in a good way, but then there are just a couple great moments each level where I am just completely panicked.
Yep.
And I don't know how a game can vacillate back and forth between making the player feel those two things in such an exhilarating way, but it totally does. Like when I'm walking around and I'm popping the minions in the head, the ones that like really don't fight back, and I'm getting health from them because I'm doing those ridiculous finishers, I feel so powerful. It's like it's the best power fantasy. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like a bunch of guys will spawn, and I have to actually think about how to take them out. I have to be like, okay, I'm gonna get high and take out the fireball throwing dudes first.
Well, there's your problem. You shouldn't be getting high if you're playing Doom. You should probably keep, you know, play it straight edge.
Just terrified.
I was gonna say go with amphetamines instead of a downer.
Yeah.
You gotta keep up, man.
Yeah.
So good though.
No, I agree 100%, Jamie. Like every level, and more so once you kind of hit it's not really a twist, but kind of like the thing that happens maybe two-thirds of the way through, the level design kind of changes a little bit, and everything becomes very much horde wave survival based. And initially I played it and I was like, ugh, gross. And I was, you know, it was like late, it was like midnight or something, and I was playing it and I was just, I was not feeling it. I went back to it the next day and I'm like, I tried it again. I'm like, oh, I get the design now. I get the level layout. And, you know, maybe it's because I didn't play a whole lot of Doom as a young person. Doom 1 or Doom 2 or anything like... Well, I guess Doom 1, but I didn't play a lot of Doom 2. But the way that things escalate in that game just makes me adore it. Because I'll be running around, like, really extreme situations where, like you said, they're just spawning tons of monsters and things get crazy bonkers bananas, and I clear it all out and I'm like, just gasping for breath, and then I'm like, wow, I just nailed that. And then I go on to the next encounter and it's like, oh, you thought that was bad? Here's even harder. And then I'll die or something too. And I'm like, okay, I need to reset and re-strategize and play this smarter. And then I'll do it. And I feel so good about my like accomplishments of beating that. Because I'm not good at video games. And when I'm going through there and I'm like, wow, this is like insurmountable, and I try it two times and I'm like, oh, okay, I totally got it now. I'm not cheesing it. I'm not doing anything goofy. It's just I feel like my skill as a player is increasing the more I play the game, because I'll go back to earlier levels and I'm like, oh, this is just, this is nonsense. Like, I'll just play with my eyes closed. Like, I don't need to double jump or anything. I got circle strafing down real tight, and I could just blast away at things and take no damage. And you know, even through level after level after level, and even into the late game, it just keeps happening where it's like, oh man, this is such a cool arena that I'm in, and it doesn't feel cheesy or poorly designed like something like a Gears of War, you know, or Halo combat encounter or puzzle combat puzzle would feel. Like, it just feels like you're getting overwhelmed by a bunch of fucking demons, and the best thing you can do is just run around and shoot them.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is the second game that I've played, Overwatch being the first recently, where I feel like there's so much going on behind the scenes that I almost wish I knew more about game development so I could talk intelligently about, like, why this game feels so different than other games. And I really just have no idea. Like, you're right. There's, like, somehow the game conveys to you in a very subtle but very effective way when you're down to, like, 2 health, and then you know, oh my god, now I have to do a finisher, I have to take these guys out, and I have to get some health from them. I don't know how it does that so in such a subtle way. I also, what you said about you're not cheesing it really struck with me as well, because something about how good the AI is and how the enemies can scramble up to you or down to you, and you never have that situation where, like, an enemy is caught, like, in some weird place on the map and you're just, like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. You always feel like you had to put everything you had into surviving, like, a big wave, and that's so awesome, and I wish I knew what was happening under the hood to make you feel that way.
Yeah, and I think I touched on it last week where I said it reminded me a bit of Rage in a good way, where the enemies were very dynamic and there was a lot of movement by them, but it seems like this time they paired it with really interesting AI, because at this point in the late game, you know, you see typical creatures that you're like, oh, I know, this is just an imp, he's going to throw fireballs at me, and it's like, oh, now it's still like a weak little turd, but it does still pose a threat. And yeah, new or old enemies kind of behave in new and interesting ways that, like, it's like, oh, if I'm going to try and run by a melee guy or a shield guy because he's just a dumb shield guy, it's like, no, he's going to blast me with a shotgun or hit me with his shield when I try and run by him. But earlier in the game, it's like, oh, he won't do that. Exactly. So the way that the AI increases their ability to deal with your maneuverability and your tactics is fascinating.
Yeah, and the guys who, you know, when it's not huge waves coming at you, the minions who you normally wouldn't give a second thought, when there are huge waves coming at you, you can't ignore them, because they'll come up on you and they'll start wailing on you, and you have to make sure that you take care of everyone on the map. This also reminds me, what you were saying about the guys with the shields and how they counter you when you get close, reminds me about how good, of all things, the codex is in that game.
Oh my god, yeah.
If you open the codex, you can look at the individual enemies, and it'll give you a background on who they, like, what type of military force or whatever they were when they were alive, and then it'll tell you in a narrative focused way what that enemy will do if you do certain things to it. So it says in the codex, if you try and get up on all those guys with the shields, they're gonna shield bash you. And this is because they were this, you know, military force when they were alive, and they focused on this. And I think that's so cool.
It is. It's like, it's almost Witcher-esque in that degree. It's probably my favorite game that I've played this year. Like, I cannot stop playing it or want to. I haven't touched multiplayer, but, you know, going through it and unlocking the secrets and going back to levels and replaying them and finding, like, the classic Doom maps and upgrading all the weapons, like, I am enjoying every single part of this game. And narratively, it's ho-hum. Like, if you're a Doom lover, like, I played it with a couple of friends, Gene and Colin, who've been on, like, previous videos. They're big Doom guys, So, like, the things that are happening in that game actually have weight to them, and seeing the monsters in, you know, real modern technology realizations, they love it. And I'm like, well, it doesn't mean a lot to me, but it still looks incredible. So I'm really enjoying it for just all these reasons that I don't really understand. But then when I see their reactions to it, I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually a really brilliant design.
I'll agree with you that the story is ho-hum completely, but I will say I am very impressed with... They must have, like, really looked at when they need to deploy story and how much, mm-hmm. or how little, rather, story they can deploy, they can get away with deploying.
Yep.
I would play this game if there were no story in it whatsoever, but it seems that...
Which there mostly is.
There mostly is, but it seems like at just the right moments, they'll just have someone just deliver, like, a line or two that somehow, even though it'll be so succinct, just it just gives me a little bit extra, and it keeps me interested in a way I didn't expect to be interested. The story is not going against my expectations or anything like that, but I feel like it works well with the gameplay, and it altogether, it's just a great package.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like doing new things like Wolfenstein was doing and fleshing out like a complex world that has yet to be realized, but in a new lens. Like it's Doom. Like it's Doom-ass Doom, and it plays like it, and the quote unquote story fits in that same kind of old school mold of like, yeah, you're a dude, and your job is to kill monsters from hell.
Yeah.
I'm still surprised this game turned out as well as it did, but I'm happy. I'm really excited to get into it. So, you guys are stoking my excitement.
I expected to buy it and tell myself this is a great game, but it's probably not worth the full $60 asking price, and it totally is.
Yep,
it's amazing.
I bought it too.
Damn. Wait, you bought it?
Wait, Griffin, yeah. you mean you
didn't?
You had it before you bought it? How'd you do that?
I used the service that will not be named to purchase the game.
Your cousin Joe?
Jafly. Jafly.
Jafly. They call me Geo Fry at my work, by the way.
Ooh.
All right.
All right, so what else we got on this list? Jamie, you've been playing a few other games.
Yes.
Hitman.
TM, Enter World of Assassination. Jeff got for me. Thank you, Jeff. And
you're welcome.
It is fantastic. I have never been... I've owned previous Hitman games that I've grabbed on like Steam sales for nothing. And I've tried them out. I've never been drawn in. I've never played them for any substantial amount of time. This one feels significantly different, especially when you finally get in. It makes you go through some training missions that I wasn't too crazy about. But then when you get into the first mission, which I'm still in...
Paris, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It just really feels completely different. The map is so dense and so intricate. I spent like maybe 2 hours playing today, and I still haven't like made any progress towards the actual assassinations, because I'm just exploring this amazingly cool and well thought out place and learning I can learn about it and figuring out, you know, where are the points on the map that I could potentially take advantage of, like who are the people that I can subdue and take their outfits without being seen, and like what are people talking about, what are some potential leads that I could use, and like just sussing those things out. On the face of it, making no progress, but you feel like you're making a ton of progress because you feel like you're actually a spy and you're gathering intel and you're working towards pulling off this crazy hit that is so improbable, but you're going to do it anyway because you're badass.
I totally agree, Jamie. I feel like unlike Metal Gear, where you're kind of always moving towards an objective, at least in previous Metal Gear games. I mean, you can argue about Metal Gear Solid 5 and more of an open world approach, but you kind of always feel like you're making progress. I feel like in Hitman, you can like fuck around as you have for 2 hours, and like you will get a weird disguise, and then you'll get into a room. You're like, oh wait, like if I even leave this room, people are going to see me, but I still feel really accomplished for getting this weird ass disguise and getting into this room.
I found myself today, I had a butcher's knife on me, and I was wearing a waiter's outfit, and I was hiding in a closet meant for models getting ready on a runway. And I was like, if I step out of this, I'm going to be spotted immediately, and I will be shot.
And then what happened when you start playing the game?
What?
And then what happened when you start playing the game?
I snuck away. Oh. I waited until...
But that... Griffin, that is the game. Like,
nope, that was a bad joke. It was a really bad joke. Just
I get it. Yeah, no. I get the joke. But part of that game is just, like, being in... They drop you in a world, and they're like, here is a world full of rules. And, like, I feel like the funnest part of that game is just, like, as Jamie has said, just kind of paying attention to the rules and just, like, learning about the rules. And I think if you liked Paris, Jamie, because it is kind of a progression, it starts with kind of very simple areas with very little to mess around with. When you get to the next level, you're going to be delighted because the possibilities in that level feel endless.
Awesome. I have a major gripe with the game that I want to mention, and I'm curious, Jeff, if you agree. I think that the game has the worst menu system I've ever seen in any AAA game. Like,
specifically what?
Specifically the entire menu. The second that you start the game up, I literally don't even know what to press to play the game.
It's like this weird ass, like, I feel like it's like just a series of ads for the game.
Yeah. You literally, like, Griffin, it looks like a really shitty, like, phone style interface with lots of like live tiles that you could click on, but it's not clear what the live tiles do.
Oh, and so it's playing like a Tony Hawk game post 2000.
I guess I don't even remember.
it's like a Ubisoft, like,
do you flip open your N-Gauge and look at what's going on in the Hitman world?
You know, like in Ubisoft games, when you go to like multiplayer mode and there's like 8,000 different banners, and you know what half of them do. That's the main menu.
And if you want to quit the game, you have to go to options, which is not on the front screen. And then in options, there's a thing that says you can quit the game. Well,
if you played more Dark Souls, you'd be used to that hot. But yes, that's dumb.
Does not detract from the game itself, obviously. But no. Every time I start that thing up, even just choosing like your save, because when you say I want to load my save, it shows you like 1,000 different save files, and it's like, these are the save files that we made for you, and these are the ones that you made. Which one do you want? A lot of them have the same time signature. You don't know which one's best.
Also, there's two different pause menus for the game, depending on whether you push the pause button or the select button.
Oh, jeez.
It's so fucking confusing.
Yeah. So what are you guys playing on? PC, I'm assuming?
PC.
Yeah. I think some of that shit is still on the console versions, but once you actually get into the world, everything HUD-related is totally fine, I felt. The changing weapons menu is a tiny bit clunky, but not bad.
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan. You're right. It doesn't impede my gameplay.
It's not the best, but exactly. Yeah, it's not the best, but it's not terrible. It takes a little bit of time to get used to kind of the way movement feels in that game, but once you get it, it's pretty damn solid.
It's really fascinating how they somehow made tank controls good again. Like, what you really
I don't know about that.
You really notice that it's tank controls when you're doing something like dragging someone. And what you realize is that in that situation, tank controls and having free movement of the camera is actually the best possible thing, because you obviously don't want to drag someone out into the open. So if it didn't give you tank controls and your view was constrained or something, then you would be putting yourself at an unnecessary risk. They somehow make it, and it doesn't really feel like tank controls when you're not dragging someone.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So. Yeah. Also, Jamie, even when you beat the first level, try to do it Silent Assassin suit only, and you will just... If you're like me, you'll save scum, first of all, because it's really hard to figure out on your own. But trying to infiltrate that level without disguises is like its own unique, insane challenge.
Oh my god, even the game... Yeah. Even just... So you turn off the cues for the opportunities, yes. Which to me is insane, because this game is really hard.
It's a tough game, but there, it's if you're patient, you can make progress. I just didn't like how the opportunities held your hand so much, I felt.
It's not the kind of stealth game where you can be spotted, discovered, and shot at, and then a couple minutes later, you'll be back to being completely fine. First of all, if someone shoots at you, you're dead immediately, which I like a lot.
You can escape, but it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Plus, you feel terrible afterwards. You're like, oh, God.
You'll have to ditch your outfit. You'll have to probably go to a different point on the map, and you'll probably have to, like, blend in doing something else before you're completely free.
Yeah.
So, this game is episodic, right? It's being released in chunks?
Yep.
What is out right now?
The third one just came out. Jamie, I thought about buying you the whole game. I'm sorry I didn't, Jamie.
What the hell's wrong with you? No, of course. I love
First Taste is free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad.
I think the episodes are, what, $10 each, I think?
I don't know, because you bought them for me.
I think they're $10 each, if you want to go that route. And the full game is $60. There are 7 episodes in total, I believe. And they're pretty meaty. I mean, Paris feels meaty, and once you get to the next level, it's even meatier. Okay, I feel weird.
Nice.
The next level is substantial. I have not tried out the latest one yet, which I believe is Marrakesh.
Which is meat packing plant?
Yes. It's a triple whopper.
The double down.
It makes you want to play more and more, because as you're going through a level, progressing towards your chosen assassination route, you will see other things that you could do, but you obviously can't do each of them because you can only kill someone once. But I really want to drop a chandelier on someone.
Exactly. Also, there's lots of fun disguises that you don't always get the opportunity to try them all out, and that's another, like, little bit of replayability. Like, hey, I wonder what it'd be like to be this dude.
Yeah.
Where can I go if I'm him?
Mm-hmm. So. Nice. Well, Jamie, you got 2 more on your list here. I'm going to start the clock since they're kind of old games, and you got 3 minutes to talk about Pocket Card Jockey.
Yay. Neither of you guys have tried this yet, have you?
Nope.
Pocket Card Jockey, as you know, probably is Solitaire on the bottom screen of the 3DS, and on the top screen is horse racing, which you control in a very minimalistic fashion, and that's it.
Much like real horse racing.
And it sounds so simple, but it really isn't. There's like a lot of systems to master, and there's a healthy element of randomness in everything that you do, which I feel like is really addicting, because You can like execute one round of solitaire really flawlessly, and it's not really solitaire. If it was just solitaire, then you would either play solitaire and you'd either win or you would lose. But it's like Nintendo-ified solitaire with like weird Japanese crazy rules that don't make any sense. And so sometimes you'll play a game of solitaire and your horse will be awesome, and some like a game of solitaire that you played well. And other times you'll play really well in the solitaire game, but the horse won't do as well. And I feel like that's where the crazy addictiveness comes in. There's something about that, like, that element of randomness that just hooks me. And I've played so much of that game.
Jamie, you know what that element of randomness is called?
The gambling. Gambling, exactly.
Have you considered going to actual horse races?
Thank God, no.
Have you considered throwing money out your window?
So that game is addicting in what I would describe as a bad way. But Hearthstone is...
Oh.
I'm still on my 3 minutes, right?
I was going to give you 6, but go for it.
Oh, okay.
No, man, that's faster is better.
Yeah, faster is better. Hearthstone, which I tried for the first time because my friend who plays... Overwatch with us is a big Hearthstone fan.
Weird.
And so I gave it a go, expecting to hate it, expecting to humor him and say, you know, I gave it a shot, but it's really not my thing. But I played it a bunch yesterday, and I played it a bunch today. I really like that game. I always liked Magic the Gathering, but I didn't ever want to spend a ton of money on it, and you can never find people to play with, blah, blah.
Jamie, can we play our Ravnica decks against each other?
Yeah. God. But I really like this game. It's simple, yet there's definitely depth there that I don't quite grasp yet. I like how I played a match, my first like online match with someone earlier today, and the matchmaking was good. I felt like the other person wasn't significant. I totally lost, but I felt like the other person wasn't like just steamrolling me. Hmm. I know, Jeff, you don't like how they make you grind. They grind out new cards and stuff, but I think that they do it in such a way that it almost feels like a Nintendo game in its execution. Like, here, play this. We'll explain a little bit to you as you go, and we'll give you this reward. And it just keeps doing that over and over again. I don't know if they've changed it recently, because I know they like recently rebooted it for like season two or whatever. But
yeah,
it
could be, yeah.
But I feel like the intro stuff is really good in that way.
The intro is very good. I played the introduction, like the 6 or 10 levels or whatever it was. And yeah, I thought, wow, this is really beefed out. And it's a thing that I could get into if I cared enough about it.
Yeah, so what did you think? Did you play it recently?
No, when it came out, like in 2014, okay. I think I played it.
Yeah, samesies.
So apparently they've completely redone the decks. So I do not believe that the cards that I am seeing and the kind of play that I'm engaging in is what you guys would have done.
You doing a little bit of butt play?
A little bit of butt play. Just a little bit.
From what I understand, it's essentially just like nerfing decks, taking old cards out of circulation, and emphasizing like continuous play and it like in any
what happens if you bought one of the old cards?
You can play in like a rule list, like a tavern brawl or whatever they call it. Yeah, like a classic mode where nothing is barred. It's the same. They're adopting the same strategies that all like
it's magic,
same like physical CCRGs do. So, but that's good, I guess, because I don't care.
Yeah,
it's basically they're just eating Magic's lunch. I mean, Magic was slow to get. It's basically the Uber of Magic. Magic was slow to get online, and you know has a lot of arcane rules and regulations. It makes sense that an upstart like Hearthstone would get in there and just usurp them. I mean, it's a simpler game.
Go on.
That's all I was going to say.
I was going to say that because you get free card packs for doing so. I tried it on the PC, my iPad, and my Android phone. And on all of those systems, like, it is just flawless and fun, and online play works well, so there's that, too.
Have you tried Overwatch on Android yet?
Yeah, Overwatch on Android, it's the Flappy Bird version.
It's nice. You tried it on your smart TV? Or your smart fridge?
Yeah.
Ooh-yah.
My PlayStation TV.
Yeah. Ooh-yah? Did you say that, Jeff?
I said 2
years. Oh, yeah.
Coming out tomorrow from Razer.
Oh, you mean the Wii?
Nah. Goddamn.
Jamie, do you have any closing thoughts on Hearthstone?
No. Well, I'll keep you guys updated. Maybe I'll fall off, you know, who knows? We'll see.
Great.
You best be falling onto Overwatch with instead of Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Play one Blizzard game, you mother grabber.
Yeah.
Heroes of the Storm?
Speaking of loser games, we're going to continue on here to the news, and each of us are going to grab a little topic here, do a little exposition on it, and keep it sweet and succinct, and I'll just, I'm not going to go first, but I'll get this thing out of the way and just say that No Man's Sky was delayed to like about 2 months later, August 9, 2016.
Those classy video gamers sent death threats not only to Hello Games, but also to Kotaku for reporting the delay.
Yep, that happened. Also, just nailed like it. The delay happened, people didn't like it. That happened.
It's just incredible to me that I can kind of, in a perverse way, understand, like, you spoiled the reveal for me, I hate you. Like, okay, fine, whatever. Like you like the thrill of the event, but like it's not Kotaku's fault the game was delayed. They're just a website. Calm down.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's real sad.
People started jumping on that guy who made that tweet because it was a death threat that he tweeted to Jason Schreier, of Kotaku, and then Jason Schreier posted a screenshot of the tweet. Which of course he's going to do, and then people started going after the guy, I just think that when people do this online, they're obviously not thinking through.
I think that by acknowledging this in anything beyond just acknowledging it, it's giving it too much attention that it deserves. So I got to end it here because I think it's gross.
Agreed.
It is gross, yeah. And it's gross. It's gross when it doubles back, as Jamie was about to say.
Yeah.
It just needs to stop. Yeah. End the cycle. Exactly.
It does. So, Jamie, I got to take a bio break. Why don't you talk about GPUs?
Yeah!
Woo!
So, NVIDIA just came out with the new GTX 1080, and they're soon going to come out with the new 1070, which is interesting because it has implications for VR and making VR work, as well as making 4K and 2K work. There's a couple interesting bits this week. I believed NVIDIA when they said that the Founders Editions, which are $100 more than the non-Founders Editions, which will be put out by the third parties, I believed them when they said they would be out by May 27th. They are out, but they're sold out everywhere.
They're gone.
They're gone. I also thought that by this time, some partner cards would be out. And I think the partner cards are forthcoming soon, but since the Founders Editions are completely sold out, I think the partner cards are just going to jump off the shelves as well. And I think it's going to be pretty hard to get a 1080 for the foreseeable future.
I think also hardware tech release dates are notoriously slippy. So yeah. That's not a surprise, really.
The other interesting tidbit, which is more recent than the launches of those two things, is AMD recently announced that its new Polaris, which is their new architecture, their new RX 480 is going to pretty much give you performance that's along the lines of the current 980, but it's only going to be $200.
Which is crazy.
Which to me is definitely more exciting than NVIDIA's announcement. Even though, I mean, NVIDIA announcing, so the 1070 in recent benchmarks, because it recently reviews popped up, so independently confirmed to be faster than my beautiful game-crushing 980 Ti.
It's about on the level of a Titan, right? It's like kind of trading blows with the Titan.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as simple as that, because the Titan actually and the 980 Ti also traded blows. But overall, the 1070 edges out the 980 Ti for sure, and the Titan X for sure.
And it's what, 150 watts?
And it's 150 watts, and it's $350, or at least it will be.
380.
Rather.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. But I think that Polaris RX 480 beating the 980 most likely for $200, that's exciting, because that's actually VR for the mass market.
For sure, yeah.
Which is
also
exciting.
for consoles potentially.
Yeah.
Which could kind of, I mean, I don't want to steal your thunder, but our two stories kind of intermingle, because
take it.
There's been a lot of reporting about how what AMD just revealed, and I guess this is like their mid-range card. Are there going to be upmarket cards from here, or is this their top of the line?
There's going to be...
They have a 90, right?
So, no, they don't have... They have Furies, and then they have the X. So, yes, this is not the top. There will be probably at least two tiers above this, and there will certainly be tiers below it.
It's weird how they launch with just this one mid-range card, but I guess it's not unprecedented. But the big buzz is that this might be the basis for at least what we see in the PS4K, or the Neo, as it's called. If this is in fact the case, then it's pretty clear that at the very least these iterations that we're hearing about with the consoles are probably targeted at VR. Especially given the stuff that came out in regard to Xbox's plans, like in the past week or two, there's a huge leak. I think it started with either Kotaku or Polygon.
Oh, he's taking this away, Jeff? You just gonna steal it from Jamie here?
Oh, I gave it to him.
Just take it.
Well, we're commingling. Right. We're commingling.
Okay. We're playing badminton in short shorts, and it's a really intense match.
Did you say short shorts or short jorts?
Short jorts.
10-year-old shorts. We're wearing the shorts of a 10-year-old. This is all just our scheme, Griffin, to talk about rumors and speculation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was starting to say it was so. It was reported kind of bits and pieces from Polygon.
Jeff, tell me about how the NX is going to have VR cartridges.
I'm not talking about the NX. Okay. The NX isn't even on my radar.
I know.
Right now.
I was just joking. Make your jokes.
It's a frozen. Anyway, big talk. Xbox is putting out their own successor console, their own mid-gen upgrade in 2017 is the big scuttlebutt. And apparently it is targeting, you know, they threw some numbers around. I think they said the PS4K was, what, like 4.4 teraflops, and this the Scorpio, which is the code name for the new model, maybe like 6 teraflops.
Yeah, 6.
Yeah, the big news that I took away from that was the fact that they are trying to put together a partnership with Oculus.
Yeah.
And I think it's really fascinating to see both Sony and Microsoft pivoting towards VR and also like upping the spec of their consoles in order to do that. And also like just with this, I'm just so intrigued about like what this is going to mean for driving innovation in the GPU market. Like I'm wondering, because they're stepping up, like is the GPU market going to increase its pace? Just the whole thing is beyond fascinating to me. Jamie, I don't know. What are your thoughts on what you've observed?
With
Gapoos and everything else.
Two thoughts. The first is, at NVIDIA's press conference where they announced in the 1080 and the 1070, they announced they came out with this technology that would make it, you know, that would make VR vastly run better on NVIDIA cards. And that technology, I read more about it since we talked about it last, and now I kind of understand it. It's essentially just, instead of doing two renders, because you have to do one per eye, instead of doing it twice, it just does one pass-through and cuts it. So it actually does double VR performance. So my first thought is, if these new consoles are based on the Polaris stuff, AMD is going to have to come up with a similar technology that does something like that if they really want to squeeze the most out of their cards. Mm-hmm. They probably will. I mean, in the history of these things, that's what happens. NVIDIA comes out with G-Sync. AMD comes out with FreeSync. So it just kind of...
Nobody buys FreeSync. Nobody buys whatever else AMD does.
And the other thought I have in regards to the Xbox-Oculus partnership is I feel like the PlayStation VR stuff is going to be so far ahead of whatever partnership they put together. Maybe the Oculus-Xbox thing will have a little bit better fidelity, but I think... that
really interesting.
When you have two companies trying to collaborate on something like this, especially when one of those companies is brand new and just completely whiffed on its first major product launch and it just went to crap, and then you have Sony, which is very talented when it comes to product launches. They developed the PlayStation VR from the ground up, like, by themselves. They have a complete handle on what it can do. They've already like released it seems like the developers who are developing PSVR games know what's up, and they've been communicating with them for a while. I feel like the Oculus Xbox stuff is going to be half-assed for a while, and they're gonna be playing catch up, I think.
Interesting. So you think it's an awkward marriage?
Yeah. Mm. We'll see, but
it's so weird to watch them, because especially given, and I guess I didn't even realize this, but I guess part of this news was that all exclusives on Xbox going forward are going to be PC exclusives as well. I feel like they're pivoting really hard towards significant interoperability between their hardware and like other like PC hardware.
They did make that announcement a while ago of being able to kind of integrate everything with the PC and the Xbox One. So it's good to see that they're making good on it now.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be such growing pains, though, like when they first announced the Windows gaming stuff and you couldn't turn off VSync in the settings for it. Like, what is that? Like, who's behind the wheel? It's crazy.
Well, that's because they were launching it through their Universal Windows platform, right? Which has a lot of inbuilt limitations due to the sandboxing, which is awkward. But it's very interesting to see them do that, because to me it represents like a profound lack of faith in consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I wonder what to make of it. And it's just thinking about the fact that, like, and I know that this is old news at this point, but thinking about consoles becoming this thing that are like upgraded, you know, every couple of years, like, what does that mean for, will we ever see like a true generational bump again? Like, are we ever going to see that moment where they're like, hey, here are the new games for new consoles that shatter your expectations of what an old game will be. Or will games forever just be scaled experiences?
I think we're going to get TikTok, because I already think that jumping from 1 terabyte or teraflop, whatever, to 6, being 6 times as powerful, that hamstrings the developers, because they're not free to do whatever they want. They have to make sure that it's backwards compatible with the thing that is 1/6 the power of the best version of what they're making.
That's exactly what I mean. Think about, like, what's available on an iPhone. Like, there are some high watermark games that, like, look great and don't run on old hardware, but they've already ruled that out, at least with this first iteration. So I feel like it's just going to be this weird, like, it's just going to be mid-gen forever.
Yeah.
And it is just a very strange place to be going into, and it makes E3 both, like, exciting and, like, very off-putting to me. And, like, oh, this is, like, there's just nothing for me to look forward to at this E3. Like, because it's going to be so much of it's going to be either the specter of these new devices that are unannounced looming over it, or just a lot of talk about the new
devices. What are those Treehouse games going to be, though?
What are those Treehouse games?
It's only supposed to be one Treehouse game, now there's many.
Well, we'll talk about that next time, but they've already said pretty much what they're going to be, and I'm sure they'll just be that and, like, nothing else.
Well, just to put my two cents in on this, the whole, like, I think Jeff, you brought it up there. The interesting question that this all brings up is, what is the future of console? And, you know, Xbox is kind of reeling at the moment since they're behind. Like, what do they do to get their market share back and their mind share back? Is the PC integration the thing to do? Is it not? Is it, you know, release a new console that's even beefier than the PlayStation 4's upgrade or whatever? Hard to say. But I'll tell you, like, right now, with my PlayStation kind of dogging with my Uncharted 4 experience, like, I'm not completely opposed to upgrading my console at this point. But then, mm-hmm. in the same thought, I'm like, well, why don't I just go all in on a PC? So
exactly.
It always comes back to this, and it is the video games. And, like, what do these companies have to show? And that's where I think E3 is, if it is the show that I'm terrified of, which is a technology show about how they're integrating all these new services of VR, like, I'm going to be super bummed out and kind of lose a little bit of faith in this next year. But on the other hand, like, if Sony or Microsoft does kind of sniff that might be not the way to go to retain players and get a new player base established is make the games that are exclusive to these things. Like, I really hope that's the direction they pick, because I am honestly getting a little nervous as somebody who adores consoles.
Me too, for sure. I love consoles, and I feel like I have less and less reason to engage with them. But good news, though, Last Guardian will probably be there, seeing as they just showed it to IGN, like, a week ago. I know you love that game, Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
I see a future.
I had so much fun with platforming last game I played.
Yeah.
All the Xbox games are going to be on PC, and then you'll have your PlayStation, and that's like my perfect future.
It's great for us, or maybe just for me and Jamie as non Xbox One owners. I don't think it's good for the future of consoles, because it just lowers the value proposition. There's one less reason to care, and I don't think that Sony can stand alone in offering exclusives. Maybe they can, but I think it's going to be tough for one console. And again, I am counting on Nintendo, but I'm going to do it anyway. It'll be tough for one console to compete against, like, the vastness of PC as, you know, this huge growing market. It'll just be really weird to watch.
Well, I mean, we're already seeing Nintendo react to the current culture by putting their stuff on mobile, so... I mean, they are not in this high tower of console exclusivity. They are branching out.
Do you guys think...
I mean, yeah, it's very slow, but yeah.
Do you guys think that Microsoft feels discouraged because a bunch of the stuff that it really banked on setting the Xbox One apart from the pack really didn't make the kind of impact that it was supposed to, like Titanfall and... what's that game where you're grinding on rails and shoot...
Sunset Overdrive.
Sunset Overdrive. I feel like no one talks about those games anymore. Titanfall 2 is coming, sure, but I just feel like if they put a lot of marketing effort into that stuff and those didn't, you know, blow the doors off. So do you feel like maybe they're saying, maybe we should just put everything out on PC and merge the PC and the Xbox and I don't know.
I think it's tricky when you're Microsoft and you have a lot of different pillars that mm-hmm. kind of almost have competing interests. And I think it's also tricky when, and I think I misspoke. I mean, you kind of called me Anna Griffin last week when I said that the
Nintendo is still alive.
Money. I think I said the 360 lost money, which it didn't. I think the Xbox division still hasn't recouped everything from the initial investment of the Xbox. I'm not sure. There are some number shenanigans going on where taken as like a pillar of their business, it's a little tough to justify sometimes. And a lot of like activist investors are like, they'll, you know, not recently, but around when Phil Spencer was coming in. A lot of activist investors would be like, you need to get rid of Xbox, spin it off. I mean, you know, remember we had conversations about that. So it's always kind of been in a weird place, and slotting it into their overall kind of portfolio is tricky. And I think right now they're kind of reassessing, like, what does a console mean to us? And what are consoles anyway? Like, are they just PCs or what? And it's weird for us to watch, and it's kind of disturbing because it's like, I thought I knew what a console was. I played them when I was growing up. Yeah. They're different than PCs, I swear. But.
And okay, so my opinion's a little different on that. And it's I think Microsoft is scared right now because Sony has the market share, and PC has the deep cut, this is the best way to play this game at the moment. So the way that I see their actions going is they're reacting to both. So they're saying, we're going to be both a new venue for, because, hey guys, who have really beefy PCs and you guys who love playing your PC games, like, enjoy the Microsoft products here as well. And they're hedging their bets with VR by, you know, creating the incremental installments of the Xboxes potentially. And I think that they're kind of turning the Xbox more into a service, more than it has ever been for gamers and less of a media thing. And then I think that is how their long game is going to work. Because, you know, looking at the people that are around me right now who kind of grew up with Xbox as their device of choice, like, they're sticking with Xbox in the same way that I stuck with like a PlayStation 3, because I'm like, I like the things they did, like, this is, my friends are here. And now I think that Microsoft is gearing up to make good on that, like, this is what we're gonna do for you going forward, you know, friends of Xbox who stuck around with us. And and by chaining it with the PC and saying, you know, if you have a PC, you can still enjoy Xbox-related products, Microsoft-related products. If you want to still have a console and engage in the same things, but at a slower degree of maturity and quality and bleeding-edge upgrades, yeah, we're there too with you. It's just, it's your old pal Microsoft. And I think...
Your old pal.
Yeah, well, I know it's easy to be cynical about it because of, you know, where we came from, but think about the generation whose first gaming experience was the 360 and was that Microsoft, you know, gamer tag, Smoke Dog 2020 2040 2028 so I think that the way that they are moving is they're going broad right now, but with the desire to kind of lasso in a new generation of people and not the TV watching 30 to 40 sports something. Loving. Yeah, sports loving fools who want their crackle. They want to recapture the audience that they once had as they age.
I think it's tough though. Like they have, you know, one foot in each world, and I think it's tough to stand there. But I guess if any company can do it, it's going to be one like Microsoft, which just has tons and tons of money around.
Yeah.
So
I think that something else to consider in this whole thing is that we've entered a new era of people not being afraid of spending serious cash on crazy hardware and buying and playing these games, which really push the hardware to its limit. I remember when when the first Crysis came out, they interviewed those guys and they asked them how many, you know, copies they sold, because at the time there was no card on the market that could max Crysis or even play it like well, unless you spent a ton of money. And I remember it was something like 70,000 or something, like 70,000 copies, which was not good for them. And now if you go to Steam Spy and you look at like how much Total War Warhammer has sold, which is a very graphically intensive game, and a CPU-intensive game, tons of units on the screen at once. It just came out. It's already sold over 500,000 copies on PC. So, and Doom on the PC, it says right here, also over 500,000 copies. So I feel like these games, these really, like, impressive games are coming out and that require, you know, beefy hardware, and people are buying them like hotcakes. And I feel like maybe companies are reacting to that also.
Mm-hmm. I would like if iterative consoles led to a faster pace of graphics card innovation, because I like the jump that I'm seeing with these cards, and I would love it if we saw that a little more often.
Mm. Yeah.
Although that would kind of suck for my wallet.
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe yeah. I'd actually hate that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that it flies in the face of all of this is if the consoles start going the direction of incremental updates, like, you know, like a phone. Well, phones have subsidy plans, so kids can get phones, and you can have multiple phones per household. Like, that doesn't exist right now. You need to have a beefy wallet or a credit card or something like that, or smarts, the ability to say no. Yeah. So,
which I fundamentally lack.
Yeah.
See my Amiibo collection.
Samesy.
Okay, any last thoughts on this before we wrap it up? I'm going to table the Pokemon talk because we're running along here.
All right. I think we had a nice chat about it. Jamie, do you have anything else you want to add?
I'm good.
Nice.
So good. All right, well, we'll check in next week when we go over some E3 predictions and potentially whatever news comes out from this point on. I guess we'll double back and talk a little bit about the Pokemon update that came out today, and then place some bets and check in on the Mirror's Edge situation.
Yes.
Ooh, that's going to be a situation, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Some impressions hit today.
Yeah, well, those don't count since they're not Metacritic.
That's true.
You guys, I love it.
Is it on EA Access right now?
Like, early?
Yeah.
That seems too early to be on EA Access. It wouldn't be out till the 7th.
Oh, okay.
Or the 8th, whatever that Tuesday is.
Well, I'm excited and nervous. I mean, I'm happy that a game I loved, Last Generation, is getting a sequel, but also just... we'll see.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right, guys. That's been it for this episode of Boss Brawl Radio. I've been Griff Hoffman. With me is Jeff Brewer.
Sweet.
And James Scherer.
Hour 15, you guys. Perfect. Perfect time.
All right.
Very nice.
And we'll see ya.
Bye.